Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here. So today's talk will take place at the intersection of two major research directions in theoretical physics. One is to understand how isolated quantum systems come to thermal equilibrium. So this is a sketch of the setup. This is at a fixed time. Our system is in a box, which is fully isolated from the environment. And you should imagine that we have many degrees of freedom inside this box, interacting strongly through a local Hamiltonian. As high-energy physicists, we would like to imagine maybe a lattice discretized quantum field theory inside the box, but the same setup is relevant in condensed matter, where the degrees of freedom are spins of electrons. In quantum information, where people talk about qubits, and also in cold atomic experiments. We will be working in highly excited states, which are out of equilibrium at time equal to zero, and which equilibrate in the asymptotic future. This setup is of foundational interest in statistical physics. The applicability of statistical physics hinges on the fact that systems thermalize, and once they do, we can apply statistical reasoning to them. There has been a paradigm shift in the past decades, moving from ensembles to closed systems in pure states. There have been very important contributions from the Eigenstein thermalization hypothesis that laid the foundations of this subject. So I know that many of you in the audience are experts, so I'll be going a little bit quicker than I usually do, but please stop me if something is not clear. So besides its foundational interest, it's also been a subject of recent intense activity in all the fields of physics that I mentioned. So we want to understand how isolated quantum systems in pure states thermalize. In what sense do they do this? The second research direction is understanding how entanglement builds space-time within the framework of gauge gravity duality. Through ADS-CFT, we learned a lot about quantum gravity through strongly interacting quantum systems. And there's the geometric prescription for computing entanglement entropy proposed by Ryu and Takanagi. There has been a recent realization in the past decade, it has been realized that entanglement is key to the connectedness of space-time. And there's a convenient slogan that we can use, is that gravity is the hydrodynamics of entanglement. And I hope to shed some light on this. And my title try to play to this direction. So at the intersection of these two directions is a quantum field theory with a holographic dual that is out of equilibrium at early times that is settling to thermal equilibrium. And in the dual gravitational language, it corresponds to a black hole forming from collapse. And so this is a Penrose diagram of a Vedia space-time. This is the ADS boundary. This gray null line is representing a collapsing shell of matter. The black line at 45 degrees is the horizon, and the horizontal red line is the singularity in the black hole. And I'll be working with planar ADS-CFT setups. So in this problem, there are no conventional small parameters, and holography, with its ability to capture real-time quantum dynamics, is indispensable in the study. We will see that entanglement plays a crucial role in thermalization. And exactly at this intersection, there have been recent breakthroughs in quantum chaos by Schenker, Stanford, and Kitaev, and then subsequently many others. And the other remark I want to make about this intersection is that holography through the lens of entanglement entropy has already taught us a lot about quantum field theory itself. The two applications that I'm thinking about is the holographic entropic C theorems, which were later proven with pure QFT methods, and also the work of Faulkner and collaborators proving new energy conditions, new constraints on quantum field theory, heavily inspired by holographic investigations. So we already have a highly successful effective theory to study some aspects of thermalization, namely hydrodynamics. It applies universally for all chaotic systems, and there's even a generalization to integrable systems. And the Navier-Stokes equation is ubiquitous in all fields of theoretical physics. It has very rich phenomenology, including turbulence. From the point of view of a high-energy theorist, hydrodynamics is an effective field theory. It's a systematic long-distance late-time expansion. And the key step in obtaining hydrodynamics is to write the stress-energy tensor in fluid variables. UA is the four velocity, rho and p are the energy density and pressure, respectively, and they depend on the local temperature. So besides U, temperature is the other fluid variable. And so I've written down the zeroth order in gradient terms in this expansion, and I grouped all the higher gradients in this tensor pi AB. In the conformal case, this pi AB to first order in gradients takes a particularly simple form. Sigma AB is the shear tensor. It's the transverse traceless derivative of the four velocity. And it's multiplied by a transport coefficient, in this case, the shear viscosity. As we go to higher and higher orders, there will be more and more tensor structures and more transport coefficients. And the dynamics follows simply from the conservation of the stress tensor. So you just take the divergence of this object, and you get the equations of hydrodynamics. The solution of hydrodynamics determines the one-point functions of conserved densities in out of equilibrium. Now, through gauge gravity duality, there's if a system is described by hydrodynamics, it must have a dual description in terms of some black hole spacetime. And indeed, this has been developed under the name of fluid gravity correspondence. So we have a collapsing black hole, which has slowly varying properties. And there's a one-to-one map between fluid solutions and gravity solutions. So that's a very nice and relatively well understood setup. But we are actually interested in more than just one-point functions of conserved densities. And that's why we are going to pursue entanglement. And just one point about the philosophy of this talk is that we could be more ambitious and try to determine the exact equations of motion for the one-point functions. And that would be very hard. So instead of that, we resort to an effective field theory type description, which is tractable. And so in the case of entanglement entropy, we will be similarly ambitious. We won't try to determine entanglement entropy exactly. We will try to construct an effective field theory akin to hydrodynamics for entanglement dynamics. And that's why I included this slide about hydrodynamics, to remind you of the philosophy behind it. So what do we really want to understand? So we take a step back and try to see how we define thermalization. So as I said, we start in the setup with a pure state with non-zero energy density. I denote it by psi zero. And because this system is closed, time evolution is unitary. It's simply a rotation in the Hilbert space. So we get the wave function at time t from the initial wave function. it will be more convenient for us to use the language of density matrices. In this case, the total density matrix of the system is a projector onto this pure state. And this guy, this total density matrix, cannot go at late times to the thermal density matrix. This cannot mean, I mean, we could attempt to define thermalization this way, but this would be a failed attempt. Simple way to see that is that this is a projector, it's a rank one matrix, whereas this is not. So this is not what we mean by thermalization. And the following remark points in the direction where we should go. The total density matrix of the system encodes all the information that is there in the initial state, but at late times in a very non-local way. So this motivates us to consider subsystems. In a local system, if we divide the system into two parts, A, the subsystem of interest, and the rest, A bar, the complement, which we regard as the environment, then we can define the so-called reduced density matrix by tracing out the environment degrees of freedom that we do not want to describe. Rho A describes describes all the experiments that we can perform in this subsystem. So it contains the complete information about physics in the subsystem. And this setup is very similar to what you do in normal static Mac, where you have a bath and your system of interest is immersed in that bath. The only difference here is that the division between subsystem and bath is imaginary, and that the bath is made out of the same substance as our own system, but conceptually this is the same setup. Okay, and now we can come up with a tentative definition of thermalization. We want the reduced density matrix of small subsystems to go to the reduction of the thermal density matrix, an equilibrium density matrix for this subsystem. This can only happen at late times in the thermodynamic limit, namely when we take the bath to be infinite. On the right-hand side, you have this inverse temperature parameter beta. It's determined self-consistently from the energy density in the initial state because we have energy conservation. And it's easy to see that entanglement plays a crucial role in making thermalization possible. If we did not have entanglement between the subsystem degrees of freedom and the rest, then the partial trace operation would be trivial. It would not be able to give us complicated dynamics for the reduced density matrix. Okay. Any questions about this setup, these definitions? And I should add that actually you can prove that this happens if you assume the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis of Mark. So this is one of the motivations. Yes?
Yeah, just a remark. Tarun Grover and some of his collaborators have shown that you really don't need to take the A bar goes to infinity thermodynamic limit. As long as A is a little bit less than half the system size, it's in many cases it still works. So it's,
you mean to exponential precision in the entropy?
Yeah.
Yes. That is good. But if we want this to be an exact equation, then we have to take the thermal. Okay. But thank you. Okay. So this motivates us to consider entanglement entropy, which is defined for any system where we have reduced density matrices by simply taking the von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix. And two properties of entanglement entropy that we will need is that in ground states of local Hamiltonians, the entropy obeys an area law. By area law, I mean the area of the entangling surface, which is just defined as the boundary of the subsystem A, denoted by sigma. Entropy is dimensionless. To make it make the dimensions work, we have to divide by some short distance cutoff, which in a lattice discretization would be the lattice constant raised to the d minus 2 power. D is the number of space-time dimensions. But ground states of local Hamiltonians are special. A generic state in the Hilbert space instead shows volume loss scaling with the volume of the subsystem, and the constant of proportionality from the consistency of statistical mechanics has to be the thermal entropy density at that energy density. Okay? Two cartoons to help us understand why these results are plausible. So in ground states of local Hamiltonians, there are only short distance correlations. So with these light blue arrows, I apologize if it's not very visible, I drew or I sketched this short distance correlation between degrees of freedom. And I colored purple the degrees of freedom who contribute significantly to the entanglement entropy. They are situated close to the entangling surface. And because there are an area of Earth of them, we get an area law. We simply add up their contributions. In holography, from the Ryu Takanagi formula, we can see on this sketch how this is reproduced, how the salient feature of entropy is reproduced. The ground state is pure ADS. We have this subsystem. In this case, it's an interval. We have the Ryu Takanagi surface hanging into the bulk. And because the volume element of ADS blows up near the boundary, the dominant contribution comes from there, and you get an area worth of entropy from there. Once we subtract this universal divergence and go to a generic state in the Hilbert space, which is described by a black hole at that energy density, we get to this situation. If our subsystem is large, the Ryu Takanagi surface lies basically flat on the horizon before coming back out to the boundary. The contribution is clearly volume, proportional to the volume of the subsystem, and the constant of proportionality is just the entropy density of this black hole. And in the field theory language, in a typical state, we expect that the degree of freedom inside is entangled with many of its friends outside. That's what these many arrows indicate. And all degrees of freedom inside look equally, and so there's a volume worth of them, and so we get the volume law. So far, we didn't have dynamics in this setup. So let me put dynamics into this. A purest way of doing it is the so-called quantum crank setup. We start with the ground state of a local Hamiltonian, so this one. And then we abruptly change the Hamiltonian and then let the system evolve. Now, this state is a highly excited state of the new Hamiltonian, and so we let it evolve. If the Hamiltonian is chaotic, we expect the system to thermalize. Eventually, it will go to a typical state, constrained by energy conservation. And so at early times, we have this setup. At late times, we have this. And let me note that if we work with translational invariant systems, then in this setup, hydrodynamics would be completely trivial. The energy density is time independent, constant everywhere. We don't see any transport. But if we look at more fine-grained observables, so not just conserved densities, but entanglement, then we can see that there's a lot of non-trivial dynamics going on at the level of the wave function. And so instead of following this complicated infinite dimensional matrix, the density matrix, we will focus on one number, the entanglement entropy, as it goes from some low value to volume law. And we hope to capture the essence of thermalization by following this process. And to illustrate all what I talked about, let me show you a famous experiment from Markus Greiner's lab with cold atoms. So on these four subfigures, the points are actual measured data points. These are second Rényi entropies, but for the discussion, we should think of it as entanglement entropy. the horizontal axis is time, and the vertical axis is the entropy. And they work with 6 coiled atoms, and they consider different entanglement cuts for this 6 side chain. So let's first focus on this subfigure. Here, the subsystem is the whole system. I told you that we are in a pure state. Correspondingly, there shouldn't be any entropy, and indeed, that's what they measure, even at late times. Okay. The next aspect that we consider is that at late times, we see volume law. So here, the subsystem is 1 spin, 2 spins, 3 spins, and correspondingly, the entropy at late times behaves, is roughly constant with the value 1 in this cut, 2 or with 2 spins, and around 3 with 3 spins.
So there's a quench at t equal to 0?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
How do you get an excess of the entropy?
They do many-body interference. They have 2 copies of the system. They independently evolve them with the same Hamiltonian. Then they do this cut, and then they do just like in a double or like in a normal interferometer, you can interfere 2 photons. Here they can interfere these many-body wave functions.
That's not what I'm asking.
Okay.
How come they get an entropy which is bigger than the nominal value that you were allowed to have? The entropy is supposed to be 1, but they have more than 1.
Oh, here you're at.
Yes.
That I haven't thought about.
Okay.
You mean, in principle, the entropy of 1 qubit can only be 1, so why is it bigger than 1?
Yeah.
Measurement error. This is a measure.
No, but they have errors here, and even the errors are.
that's some error bar, right? That's
yes.
One sigma error or something. There may be a better answer. It may be some systematic error measurement procedure. But the point is still, it's a measured thing.
Actually, the continuous line is numerical calculation, so there must be some aspect of the system that I don't understand, because even that goes above 1. I haven't realized this. Thank you. I don't know.
But a similar question is in this last panel, we're measuring the entropy of the entire system.
Yeah. But that looks like a measurement error. So I think there, the simulation would be just a 0.
No, that would be state preparation combined with the exterior in some sense. It's not as pure as the
error bar. But given that that's almost 1, should I even?
Oh, this one is almost 1. Yes.
Yeah. So maybe we should think there's a systematic error of some.
Probably not a pure state. That might be the resolution.
Like the environment, whatever the purification is.
No, but that would still prevent this thing from going above 1.
Well, when they do this, when they measure the second remaining entropy, they have to do this swap operation.
Yes.
It's a question of whether you're really swapping just the first site, or you're actually swapping the first site together with the purified system, purification. So there's the difference between measuring the remaining entropy for the first qubit or for the last 5 qubits.
Okay.
And is the second Grignani entropy actually bounded by 1 in a 2 qubit system?
Yes, it's bounded by the first.
By the entropy.
Since I have not thought about this, I just wanted to illustrate the concept. So, yeah, but this is excellent. I just really don't know. And the last aspect that I wanted to talk about is that, as Gary was asking, at early times, we have a low value of entropy, and then, especially on this figure, you can see that there's a linear growth of entropy until saturation. Okay? So I hope to have set the agenda. We want to find an effective theory akin to hydrodynamics, so it's a long-distance late-time expansion for entanglement dynamics, and hope to learn some insights into thermalization, and also perhaps into entanglement building spacetime. The features of thermalization that we discussed was that the total density matrix remains pure for all times. But small subsystems can become thermal through becoming entangled with the rest of the system. And we hope, and by following the evolution of entanglement entropy, we hope to capture the essence of thermalization. And so the method that we will follow, I want to illustrate with the following alternative history. So it could have been that string theorists studying gravity or black holes in ADS discover hydrodynamics. And then they could have abstracted away from just holographic systems to boldly conjecture that hydrodynamics describes all chaotic systems. And so, of course, this is not how it happened, but we will try to study holographic systems, come up with a prescription that is generalizable to all chaotic systems, and then conjecture that actually all chaotic systems are described by the effective theory that I will present to you. Okay. So this is the outline. I will discuss briefly universality classes of entropy dynamics, and then there will be two. I will focus on one, which is related to chaotic systems, and I will derive it from holography and relate it to tensor networks. I will explain what I mean by that. And in the remaining time, which may be short, we'll explore some of the aspects of this theory. Its interplay with emergence of geometry, operator growth, and hydrodynamics. And finally, I'll summarize. So the proposal is that there are two universality classes of entropy dynamics. The first one applies to 2D integrable models, rational conformal field theories, and higher dimensional free field theories, and it runs under the name quasi-particle model. Then the other universality class would contain all chaotic systems. The holographic results can, or the HRT prescription can be in the hydrodynamic limit can be reformulated into something called the membrane theory. It can then be adapted and generalized to any chaotic system. It's known to apply to holographic theories, to something called random quantum circuits that I will explain, and there's also evidence for chaotic spin chains. Of course, a natural question is whether there's something in between, but we don't know of any example. And if true, if there are only two such universality classes, then this would be analogous to the dichotomy between hydrodynamics and generalized hydrodynamics, which we have high confidence in, that there are only two universality classes for conserved density dynamics. So we will try to find evidence for these universality classes and I will explain to you what we mean by these effective theories. So qualitative picture of entanglement growth looks as follows. So we will be considering a subsystem which is a lot greater than the inverse temperature, and at times which is a lot greater than this local equilibration timescale. So this is like the hydrodynamic limit. So the entropy behaves as follows. At early times, before local equilibration time, it has some transient behavior. And then there's a parametrically long regime of linear growth, which we also saw in the experiment. And then it caps off smoothly and saturates at some finite time to the volume law value, which we already discussed. So this local equilibration timescale is when one-point functions reach their thermal value. This is from here on, hydrodynamics applies. The saturation timescale is of order the region size. It's the order of light crossing time. It is the time that it takes for correlation functions at large separation to come to thermal equilibrium. Okay, so these are the two timescales, and we go to a regime where they are where there's a large separation between them. And in these works, it's been understood that the linear growth is pretty universal. It is proportional to time. It only depends on the shape of the entangling surface through its area. Because we are after local equilibration, there's the thermal entropy density naturally appearing. And then we are left with a quantity which is dimension speed, and it's called the entanglement speed, VE. It's defined through this relation. Okay? So this was a sketch. Let me show you actual results. So this is a free field theory computation for a sphere in three space-time dimensions. The data points are actual numerical results. And there's a very faint solid line, which you probably don't see, but believe me, it goes through exactly the data points. And this solid line is a prediction of this quasi-particle theory. And there's zero parameters fit here. So it's just very convincing evidence that this quasi-particle model, whatever it may be, I don't have time to explain it, but I can do it in private, describes this setup. Okay?
Zero parameters fit? So the just the entanglement velocity is some universal number you put in?
Yes.
Okay.
So you, yeah.
No a priori, right?
Yeah. And this is, I mean, you don't see it, but this is for a very large sphere in thermal, in inverse temperature units, it's 300, its radius. That's why the agreement between the data points and the effective theory, which is only a long distance approximation, is so great. If I consider the smaller subsystem, there would be larger deviations between the solid line and the actual data points.
Sorry, but this was for a translation invariant question.
Yes.
So if you don't do a translation invariant, you can have all kinds of weird behavior in the
middle. Yes, I just haven't analyzed that. Yeah. This was a simple quench.
Just so I understand, the answer is independent of the mass of the free field?
This is a quench to the conformal point. So it starts from a massive ground state, and then...
So if the theory you quench to has a mass scale in it, then the dynamics is different.
Yes. That is correct. And by zero parameter fit, this mass appears in the entropy density, but that you can calculate from thermodynamics. So that's how you say, yes. So this was for free theories, and similar agreement can be reached in 2D CFTs and so on. So let's go to chaotic systems, holography in three dimensions. This is a somewhat busy plot, but let me guide you through it. So first of all, this red solid line is the prediction of this membrane theory that I will derive for you and explain to you what it is. So this is the effective theory, and then we have data points. The ones that deviate more from these solid lines are for small spheres, so small regions, and they have been rescaled to show you a curve data collapse. And there are two colors corresponding to two different quench setups. Then there are data points that lie on this red curve, and these are for large spheres in both quench setups. The blue and the green data points lie on top of this curve. This I take as evidence that this membrane theory again reproduces this particular chaotic dynamics of entanglement. This is numerical evidence. Okay, so these are the two universality classes.
They both have the rough form described in your top plot.
Yes, right? Yes, yes. So I'm commenting on that. So they give very similar looking curves. So you might think that, okay, I mean, you get the same rough picture. What's the fuss about two universality classes? Okay, so So indeed, they look similar, but the physics behind them is very different. And if you look at details of the predictions, they are actually different. So the question you asked about VE, in two dimensions, it's actually one for in both models. But in the integrable setup or free setup, if you consider multiple intervals, then you can get very different looking dynamics. I'm just not showing it to you. In the quasi-particle model, whereas in the membrane theory or in holographic systems, you do not get those deeply complicated behavior. Then in higher dimensions, there's a difference in the value of this entanglement speed. In particular, in this paper, we showed that there's actually many variants of the quasi-particle model in higher dimensions, but all of them can only give this VE, this entanglement speed, which is smaller than equal to this geometric number, which only depends on the dimension, and it's smaller than 1. And it's also smaller than what you get in holography. So the conclusion is that in strongly coupled systems, somehow entanglement can grow faster than what's possible from quasi-particles that are propagating with the speed of light. And that, at the time, was a big surprise. I mean, we understand now that because entanglement is not a conserved density, it gets generated by interaction, so that lies probably behind this result. Nevertheless, it's good to have something in mind that strongly coupled systems can grow entropy faster than what's possible with quasi-particles. With transport, this would not be possible. Interactions always slow down transport. Okay.
For the plot.
Yes.
It seems that the rule curve is dipping below 0.
Because I applied a subtraction, and that subtraction was not the value at 0 time. It was some different subtraction.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good question. Okay. So let me explain to you what this membrane theory is and how to derive it from holography. So this will be the effective theory which I propose applies to all chaotic systems. Okay. So for this, so again, we go to this hydrodynamic limit, and we want to understand HRT services in detail in this limit to come up with a simplified description of them. So here I drew an HRT surface on this Penrose diagram of a collapsing black hole. So it's anchored at some time t. It has three parts. It connects the boundary to the black hole horizon, which I denoted by dashed line. Then it travels towards the past in behind the horizon. Then in the past, it meets this, this shell of matter. And in the pure ADS region of the space-time it caps off. So here I'm suppressing field theory spatial directions. On this picture, I'm keeping them, but I'm suppressing time. So we have the horizon here, the shell here. This is the part that connects the boundary to the horizon. This is the behind the horizon part, and this is in the pure ADS part. Okay, so these are the three parts. And the main observation is that if we are only interested in the leading part of the entropy, then we only have to consider this behind the horizon part of the surface and can forget about the rest, because this is the one that contributes a volume worth of entropy. The other guys only contribute an area worth of entropy. And so if we go to the large region size limit, then those are negligible. So what do I mean by this? If I rescale everything by this characteristic size r, then this is an extensive contribution, and then I have a scaling function which only depends on the ratio of time with r. And then, so this is the volume scaling, and then there are subleading area scalings. And the statement is that you have that the volume piece comes solely from this part.
I'm just confused.
Yes.
Is the part, are you saying the volume piece comes from the part between the dashed green line and the gray line?
Yes, so it comes from this part or this part, yes. So this is in pure ADS, so this is like a hemisphere. This clearly just gives area, because in the vacuum we have area law. This also gives clearly area law, and this gives volume law, because if you look here, then it travels a long time behind the black hole horizon. That's why it can give volume law.
If there's something funny about your picture, it looks like it should look more like this.
Yeah, this is actually how it looks on the Penrose diagram.
That
is? I mean, this is.
Right. It should go to the origin. It should just, right, presumably.
No. I mean, it doesn't go to the...
Oh, it caps off before.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Of course.
Yes. So let me give you a sketch of... So now we will just focus on this part. This analysis, you have to believe me, because I'm not showing it. So we are focusing on the behind the black hole brain horizon part of the geometry. And there, actually, the geometry is that of a static black hole. So that's where we get universality. On that figure, we saw that different quench setups gave the same entropy, and that's the origin of that. That no matter how we quench, this part of the geometry is only determined by equilibrium properties. And this is good, because we expect chaotic systems to quickly forget how we prepared the state, and the entropy dynamics at late times should only depend on the properties of the conserved density. Okay, so I write I use the Z bulk radial coordinates, and I'm writing the black hole in infalling Eddington-Finkelstein coordinates. And in the boundary, I'm using polar coordinates, but that's not important. Okay, and then I implement this hydrodynamic limit in the following scaling way. So I scale time, so lambda is a large parameter. I scale time. I scale boundary spatial distances, but I do not scale bulk radial distances. And if you undertake this rescaling, the area functional that you're supposed to extremize according to HRT simplifies. Derivatives of the bulk radial coordinate Z drops out. So one thing I forgot to mention, so HRT surfaces are codimension 2, so we can describe them with two dependent coordinates, and I choose them to be Z and R. That's why it's written like this. So again, repeating the statement, the area functional simplifies in the scaling limit. The dependence on Z becomes algebraic. Its derivatives drop out. And this is the key simplification, because it leads to an algebraic equation of motion of Z that I sketched here, and so, which we can solve. And so we partially solve the equations of motion and plug back into the action, thereby reducing the problem into this so-called membrane theory, which I will explain right now. So by solving for Z, what we are doing is projecting this HRT surface onto the boundary along constant infalling time slices. Yeah? So if we project this guy onto the boundary, then we get the following picture. So I'm working now in two boundary dimensions, just to show you. So it was a codimension 2 surface, but we projected it to the boundary, and now it becomes a codimension 1 surface. In this case, a word line of a particle stretching between two ends of Minkowski space. One end is the time at which we are asking what the entanglement entropy is, and this green line is this green line, the time of the quench. So again, we are only focusing on this part, and if we project it, then we get this picture. Now, the interesting thing is that without ever talking about... So we detach ourselves from ADS now, and we can formulate an action principle purely for this boundary object, Namely, we are supposed to minimize the following action. It's a word. It's the action of this word line. So in this case, it would be just the proper time integral of some Lagrangian, which depends on the speed of this particle. So the Bob geometry is encoded into this Lagrangian in this following way. So as a reminder, A was the bulk metric function, like that was the that was one component of the metric, and then you have to process it a little bit, and it becomes dependent only on the speed of this word line, which is a purely boundary object. So perhaps this was too quick, so let me repeat. I'm telling you that there is an action principle for these boundary word lines. If you minimize this action on shell, this gives you the entropy, and you never have to talk about ADS in this picture. And if you wish, you can reconstruct the HRT surface from the knowledge of this minimal word line, or in higher dimensions, a minimal membrane, this is where the name comes from, by simply mapping, so using this equation of motion to map the speed locally into bulk radial position.
What are the boundary conditions here on this equation of motion? I mean, I understand the boundary conditions at your late time slice.
Mm-hmm. It's Neumann here, so it has to end perpendicularly. Yes. Here.
I see.
So if you vary this action, then I'm telling you that there are no boundary terms. And if you vary it, then you get Neumann.
So I guess I'm just confused by the action in the picture. You said it's the integral over the error.
Well, if it's in higher dimensions, this is a membrane. But in this case, it would be just integral over proper time that parametrizes this word line.
Let me ask my question in this context. There's integral over proper time. Oh, I see. Well, okay, proper time. So the entire Lagrangian in there is just some function of the velocity.
Yes.
So isn't the equation of motion velocity equals constant?
No, because it's velocity. So the variable is position. So you take the derivative of this. This will be give you something like acceleration is equal to something speed dependent. It will be. So, I mean, the Lagrangian is something. Is this visible, or should I move further? So if I want to derive the equations of motion of this, then I get that
doesn't matter if V is equal to a constant.
Or if V is a constant, doesn't it solve that equation of motion independent of what V is?
Oh, yes, okay, in one dimension it does. But in higher dimensions, because of the area element, there's also dependence on position.
So,
yeah, okay.
This picture looks like in
yes.
Two dimensions, something funny happens.
Yes, no yes, way. Yes, okay. I agree with you. Right. Sorry, yes.
And in higher dimensions?
I can show you actually a higher, so this is actually a numerical.
But I'm sorry, I should mention the action. In higher dimensions, it's an integral over all these points on the membrane.
Yes.
But there's no derivative terms along the membrane.
Yes.
Each point of the membrane moves independently.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So this will lead to cuspy behavior, for example.
Right.
Yeah, but let me show you. So this is a membrane in actual numerical simulation corresponding to an ellipse.
If each point moves independently, why isn't it the same thing in higher dimensions? Where each point moves with constant velocity?
But if you wrote the area element out in, for example, polar coordinates, that will have some dependence on the coordinate as well as the derivative of the coordinates.
So
would just be a function of the velocity.
I can try to, like, even if there was no velocity dependence, let's just take minimal surfaces in higher dimensions, like a soap bubble, right, that has non-trivial curvature, even though the action is just the area.
I'm trying to understand area of
is the this area thing. Element on the membrane.
The space-time area.
Yes.
Okay. All right, but the action is obviously it has some reference frame built into it. It's not
the discourse. Yes.
So
the speed is measured with respect to the unit time-like vector. Yeah, but that's what we call speed.
And it's the speed. I guess I'm trying to understand what this means when I study this action, because there's so if I take a point,
yes.
And I follow the world line of that point, which is well defined because it has some equation of motion. Am I varying this action with respect to the velocity? I'm trying to understand if this is sort of intrinsically an Eulerian description of a fluid flow, or is it a Lagrangian description, or does it matter? I guess I'm not certain I really understand this action, or I guess I'm also said a different way. Oh, I see. You say that the velocity really is just at each point of the membrane.
Yes.
At each point of the membrane space-time.
Yes.
I compute the...
This one. So this is the so you take the local normal vector of the membrane, you dot it into the time-like unit vector, you form this combination. This is what I call V.
Oh, I see. So it's the normal to the membrane. I don't need to worry about a moment of time in the membrane in any way. It's just the normal to the entire membrane on
yes.
the surface.
Yes.
No, wait, that only works for Vadia, right?
Oh, this also. So this works in any quant setup at late times and large distances. It works equally well in, for example, this end-of-the-world brain quench of Hartmann and Maldesin.
What is this going to be a function of at the end?
So it's a functional of this boundary region, which only through boundary conditions, so the membrane has to end on the entangling surface. And it's a function of time because the separation between these two slabs in Minkowski's space is time. So
sure. But you're still using a Schwarzschild metric for a black hole in ADS.
Or Reissner-Nordström or any static black hole works equally well.
So the HRT surface is space-like.
Yes.
And when you project it out,
It becomes time-like. And that's because we are only focusing on the behind the horizon part of the surface, where Z is the time-like coordinate.
I see. Yes.
But even though this is in Minkowski's signature, epsilon of V is such that you are supposed to minimize this action among time-like membranes. So usually in Minkowski's space,
Okay, so let me backtrack again.
Yeah.
So this presumes that you have some gravity solution from which you can extract this thing. So if somebody just gives you the entropy thing, could you reconstruct the space-time where it came from?
Yes. Yes.
Unambiguously?
Yes. So there's actually, so entropy in principle is a very complicated functional of regions. This, in one function, this epsilon of V, it's enough to, for example, consider spherical geometry. From that, I can reconstruct this function epsilon of V. And from there, I can make infinitely many predictions for other shapes of entropy. And from epsilon of V, there was some expression on the previous slide, how it's related to this metric function A of Z, and you can reconstruct it if you know A.
Go back a second.
Yes?
To the previous one. No. You have a full metric.
Yes.
So there's A and B. Would you be able to say anything about B?
No, not to leading order. Yeah, you're right.
And just to understand that to this E of V function, it does depend on what kind of bulk black hole you have.
That is correct. It only depends on the value of the conserved charges, though. So that is in very good harmony with the fact that these are conserved, so our entropy dynamics should depend on them. And so let me just show you these epsilon of V guys for Rm black holes. This is how the chemical potential increases. So this is Schwarzschild. And then Ve, well, okay, I haven't explained. But these are the curves that you get. And what are the properties that they have? At V equals 0, their value gives this entropy speed Ve. They are monotonic and convex. And the remarkable property is that they touch this 45-degree line at the value which you recognize as Vb, the butterfly speed, which is familiar from out-of-time ordered correlation functions. And at this level, this is just a surprise. And we can argue for this later. But these things you can prove for any static black hole. This will work. And it gives an intriguing connection between entropy dynamics and quantum chaos.
I'm sorry, what does this mean again? Ve is?
Ve is the value of epsilon at 0 V.
Oh, the value of epsilon.
Yes. Okay. So it's a funny thing that we also call that V. But yeah, it's just historically. But here at the 45-degree line is both. On the x-axis you have Vb, and on the y-axis you have Vb, because it's a 45-degree line. This is how it looks. And if you gave me this curve, then from there I can reconstruct this A function in the black hole. You are right that I cannot reconstruct the B function from the leading order. Okay? So just to drive home this point, this is purely a boundary problem, and if we minimize it, we get a minimal word line in 1 plus 1 or a minimal membrane in higher dimensions. And if we wish through that, there's a map, an explicit map, which we can use to push this membrane back into the bulk uniquely. So if we wish, we can reconstruct the HRT surface. We didn't lose anything. Okay. Oh, I'm really running out of time, but it's fine. So did I answer the question how this is an action? And yeah, it's a great point that actually in 1 plus 1, you get V equals straight lines. Yeah. This is actually a true membrane for a spherical region, but in higher dimensions.
Which is when V equals 0.
Yeah.
Higher
dimensions. Yes. Okay, so let me just, because I'm running out of time, let me just say, for those of you who are familiar with tensor networks, is that this membrane is very reminiscent of cuts through tensor networks. And actually, in some setup, so let's imagine an evolving state, tensor network description of an evolving wave function, in particular in random quantum circuits, the tensor network that starts from a product state and then is built from the action of a random circuit on this. The tensor network description looks like this. And there's a well-known way of bounding the entropy in tensor networks through a minimal cut prescription, which in some particular random tensor networks or random circuits can be shown that in this hydrodynamic limit actually equals the entropy. And these authors have shown that you get the same kind of action principle in a particular kind of random tensor networks. So this minimal membrane prescription also emerges in some calculable tensor networks. And there, the membrane is interpreted as a coarse grain cut through the tensor network. Don is puzzled.
You explained what the membrane was. I don't think. Did you explain how to compute the entropy as a function of time?
It's the on-shell action.
Oh, it's the on-shell action.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
And
wait,
he,
but I thought these were one-dimensional systems.
Yeah, these are one-dimensional systems.
So they would be subject to what we were saying before.
Yes. But okay, you can still by if you consider the thermofield double state in these one-dimensional systems, and you consider two-sided entropies, then you can actually vary this So even though it's constant, you can, by changing the boundary regions, you can probe this epsilon of v function, and you can. So just from measuring entropy, you can reconstruct this epsilon of V. You can also consider non-homogeneous states, and in their evolution, there is actually some membranes which are not constant emerge. But yes.
So is this supposed to model the entire HP curve you've done before, or just the linear growth part and not the saturation?
It's supposed to model everything. Yes.
So in the two-dimensional case, I see the linear growth part. That's easy.
Yes.
But why does it saturate?
I did not tell you one additional rule, which is that you're also allowed to cut horizontally.
Cut what?
Cut the tensor network horizontally. In the gravity description, if the HRT surface climbs out from behind the horizon, then you get a different rule. So you are actually taking the minimum of this and the volume law value.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
So there's an additional rule.
There's an additional rule that I glossed over. But let me just show you how the membranes look in. For example, this is for a three-dimensional sphere. At early times, the membrane is almost straight. Then at intermediate times, it starts to bend in. And at late time, near saturation, it becomes a cone. And the slope is this VB. And this is how I produce this red curve. So this is how you can reproduce the this numerical calculation from this analytical effective theory. Okay? So there are many applications, but the main point is that there exists this effective theory. It applies in the same regime as hydrodynamics, and it gives a description of entropy dynamics in a language that does not require higher dimensions. It's purely in field theory terms. So, lots of stuff here. Let me conclude. So the goal was to find a hydrodynamic description of entanglement entropy dynamics to understand thermalization and emergence of geometry. And we saw that this is now experimental science to some extent. We discussed two proposed universality classes of entropy, and we saw some example systems where these universal descriptions actually work. And from there, we conjectured that this membrane theory actually describes all chaotic systems. It certainly describes holographic theories, and it also describes these random quantum circuits. So the challenge is to find new systems which it also describes, or new systems that do not fall into these two universality.
Describes it.
Yes.
Is E of V some function that is universal for all systems?
No. So E of V depends on conserved quantities. So E of V is, you should think of E of V as a transport coefficient, a function worth of transport coefficients. Right. Just like hydro you need to input these guys. Yes. But as I said, you can read this guy off from considering one shape, and then it gives predictions for all other shapes. So that's good enough.
So I'm going to be difficult.
Yes.
You use that to actually predict standard transport coefficients?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And the answer is, of course, not yet. But the one thing that we have is that there's indication that it's related to that. So there was this VB, which we know how to calculate independently. And so at least one point near the 45-degree line, we can predict what this E of V is. And the hope is that if we learn more properties of it, we would be able to reconstruct the whole curve from correlation functions, but we're not there yet. And so there's relation with tensor networks and many applications. And okay, I'm really out of time, so I'll leave the open questions out, and thank you for your attention.
With lots of questions, you didn't really get to say what the connection to tensor networks was. Could you repeat that?
Okay, so an independent line of condensed matter research found the same description of entropy dynamics in these random quantum circuits. So that's one connection. Okay. Yeah, so maybe, yeah, I went too fast.
But where E of V has some...
some particular form depending on the architecture of this random quantum circuit.
Is it something that can be explained briefly, or is it a complicated relationship to the architecture?
I only know of two examples where it's been calculated, and I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know how to translate the architecture into epsilon of V. But it's, yeah, maybe some people know. I don't. And it's also epsilon. This E of V has also been extracted numerically from a random. A chaotic Ising type model. So simply by doing exact diagonalization, calculating entropy in thermofield double like states, they extracted numerically there's a curve for a particular Hamiltonian system.
And when you talk about random quantum circuits,
yes,
is that Well, let me just get to get your picture.
Yeah, it's here.
Okay. So
let me explain it, and then maybe everybody benefits.
Okay, great.
So we start from a product state, which is just this description of, so these are qubits, and then they are independent. And then at infinitesimal time, we randomly choose two of them, act with a random unitary on them. And so this is an infinitesimal step in time evolution.
Okay, you pick two at random, or
yes,
are they nearest neighbors?
A nearest neighbor in randomly, yes.
Okay.
And then you iterate this procedure. So locality is built in, nearest neighbor. Yeah, you iterate this procedure, and this is how the wave function evolves. And the statement is that at late times, this coarse grain minimal cut actually gives you the number of legs that you cut in the tensor network is actually equal to the entropy. This is not even large n. This works for finite on-site Hilbert space.
And minimal cut, I guess it's from here, you have to go around the unitaries, but you're
allowed to cut.
Yeah. And with something like a Neumann boundary condition on the
question? Yeah, not the same part.